Disasters are a reality of life in the Pacific, but so is the strength and resilience of its people. Pacific Prepared shares first-hand stories from communities on the ground, drawing on tradition, culture, and collective wisdom to stay safe and support one another in times of disaster. Pacific Prepared explores how communities are adapting and protecting what matters most. Search up ABC Pacific Prepared to listen online or find it wherever you get your podcasts.
In 2024, a call rang out from Palau.
There was a request from Kayang Island. Basically, they said that taro was no longer growing in the center of the peats.
Giant swamp taro, one of Palau's most important crops, had slowly stopped growing. Which was strange because the taro was used to growing in harsh conditions on atoll islands, able to thrive where there is very little soil.
So this is one of the resilient crops that normally grow in these harsh conditions on this poor atoll soil. It is used for cultural purposes as well as it's a good food security crop. When you have abundance of food, you don't harvest it. But whenever there is a drought, you go back and harvest this crop, and that takes you along the drought period.
So a group of women farmers reached out to scientists from SPC, the Pacific community, to help them find out what was wrong.
Women's group came to them and said, please visit our taro peat and see why it's not growing in the center and why the population has started to decline and why is it dying and rotting away.
Rohit Lal is a soil scientist with SPC and was part of the team asked to investigate why these plants were dying off.
So we went in to look at the water samples and the soil samples as well as look at the plant.
What they found was a problem that threatens crops right across the Pacific and sent Rohit on a determined journey to figure out how to save Palau's taro plants from death.
We need to maintain our food security level, and it can only happen if we try to grow them locally in the islands.
Hi, I'm Scott Wyday, and this is Polytalk. When local traditional crops start to die, it puts the whole Pacific region at risk. And right now, a quarter of the people in the Pacific are food insecure, which means it's harder for them to grow and buy nutritious food. And one in five people can't afford a healthy diet, relying on imported food and leading to a host of health problems. Food security is a phrase you often hear in big global meetings. So today, what does it mean for everyday people? And what is the region doing about it? Palau's giant swamp taro has huge, heart-shaped leaves, often more than a meter long. And it stands tall on a thick stem and is heavy, weighing up to 15 kilograms. That weight comes from what's hidden below in the muddy waters where it grows in, a dense, starchy corm, rich in nutrients and energy.
It's a source of carbohydrates, and it is also one of the ways of reducing dependence on imported food.
In Palau and around the Pacific, as traditional crops become harder to grow, many people have turned to processed and canned foods, high in salt and fat, and it's led to a health crisis across the region.
It was hard for them when things were not growing. So more reliance on imported food started to take place because the local crop was not growing in the place where it was traditionally grown.
So Rohit and his team from SPC were determined to figure out how to help Palau's farmers and find out what was killing the taro.
Taro was no longer growing in the center of the peats. So the island has got three taro peat, but unfortunately the taro was only growing on the edges of the peat but not in the center, and the main production areas were declining over the years.
Most taro across the Pacific are grown in gardens, but the giant swamp taro in Palau grows in deep swampy pits carved into the land because as an atoll nation, Palau has poor soil quality.
So food production on atolls like Kayang in Palau is challenged by several factors. One of them is saltwater intrusion. The other one is flooding.
So the pits are dug down to reach fresh water below the surface and have been tended to over generations. Rohit's team took water and soil samples to find out what was going on.
We then analyzed the soil samples. The soils were alkaline, pH levels were very high. And then the other two things that were very high in that soil, one was sodium, the other one was chlorine. So these two are basically related to saltwater intrusion.
Rohit explains that in recent years, Kayangil Island has been battered by cyclones, and salt water from the high tides and flooding had become waterlogged in the pits, killing off the taro. As climate change worsens, cyclones in the Pacific are expected to intensify, bringing heavier rain, more flooding, and greater damage to crops. Palau sits just meters above sea level, which left Rohit and his team facing a tough question. How do you save taro pits when the ocean keeps pushing in?
Well, when you look at the problem, there could be two things that you could do. One, you do a drainage, but the atoll itself is a low-lying and almost at the same level as seawater. So if you drain that water, more seawater will infiltrate into those pits. So you cannot do drainage. And the question was, if you cannot do drainage, what else could you do?
His solution came from old wisdom, traditional knowledge that Pacific women have used over the ages.
So looking at the traditional knowledge, traditionally the women's group had been planting taro in other parts of the Pacific. During a trip in Kiribati, we noticed that women were planting them in pandanus basket. These baskets were used to raise the bed, planting bed above seawater level. And then using the compost, using the organic soil, planting the taro in this basket, and it was growing well. So looking at these options, we went back to the women's group, spoke to the chief, which is also a woman of the island, discussed with her and told her we'd like to try some nature-based solutions like using pandanus leaf, raising the beds, then applying organic compost, organic materials into those baskets and then planting taro to see if it well works or not.
But they came up against a hurdle. The women pushed back saying they didn't want to use pandanus leaves because they used it as a source of income, to weave mats to sell. So listening to the women, the scientists changed course.
And we decided what was abundance on the island, and they said coconut leaf was abundant. So we collected the coconut leaves. Women helped us to weave the basket. So it was 3 days of continuous weaving. We needed quite a lot of baskets so that we could place in replicated field trials.
Rohit's team put together three planting experiments. In one pit, they planted taro the old way, straight into the pits. In another pit, they raised the ground, building beds packed with coconut husk. And finally, in the last pit, they lifted the crop right out of danger, weaving coconut leaf baskets, then filling them with soil and organic matter and planting taro above the reach of the rising sea.
So we decided to come back after 6 months to see, first of all, if there's any germination. What we noticed was that the plants that were planted directly in the pit, in the soil, most of them had died away. The ones that were in the coconut husk, I think about 20-25% survived. But the ones that were in the basket, about 75% survived. This showed us that if you raise the planting bed using baskets and putting in some good soil, some shaded material that provides organic matter, the plant could grow.
Working together with Palau's farmers, Rohit and his team had managed to save the giant swamp taro.
And now we were sure that things would grow. And I think it's growing now. So basically, a nature-based solution using traditional knowledge, modifying it a little bit with scientific knowledge, using science with traditional knowledge can help to, you know, can provide solutions to problems such as this.
And Rohit believes it's a solution that could apply to the rest of the region as it battles food insecurity.
We need to look at the traditional ways of rebuilding soil fertility level so that things could grow over there. If not, reliance on more imported foodstuff would continue.
Food security in the Pacific is a real challenge.
Karen Mapusua is the Director of Land Division Resources at SPC.
Of course, traditionally, we ate from the sea and we ate from the land, and everyone was growing food for their family and for community.
She explains that as colonization spread across the Pacific, new foods were introduced. And when the region moved towards a cash economy, it began to strip away the traditional food system.
We've got a generation of young people who might prefer rice over taro or cassava, for example. Many of us work in offices, so we're not going to the farm to produce our own food. We're buying it in the supermarket or in the local market. We have other taste preferences as we've had different waves of migration come through in different parts of the Pacific. So it's really fundamentally changed.
The food resources have also changed.
Our natural resources are degrading. So our coastal fisheries are under pressure from overfishing, but also climate change. And the same on our land. Our soil has been degraded over time, particularly as we've moved away from traditional methods of production into what we now call conventional methods, where there's heavy ploughing of the soil and a lot of use of agrochemicals. And that's degraded the soil and the ability for us to produce food on our own land. But there's also other impacts on pest and disease loads, for example. As the climate changes and there's more or less humidity or higher temperatures, different pests become a problem to grow food.
And it's left the region in a complex health battle.
So you see that in our obesity rates in the Pacific. It means that we're getting enough calories, but we're not necessarily getting the right food. At the same time, we're seeing sort of on the other end of that micronutrient deficiencies, problems with anemia across the region, not enough iron in the diet.
Karen explains that for a long time, the way the Pacific dealt with this issue was to ramp up food supply.
In the past, we really dealt with food security as a purely production issue. If we grew more food, we'd be more food secure. If we caught more fish, we'd be more food secure. Because traditionally, all our government ministries, for example, have worked in silos. Agriculture deals with agriculture. Public health deals with public health. Trade deals with trade.
But she says in 2021, that all changed.
Welcome to the UN Food System Summit 2021, Pathways to Sustainable Food and Nutrition.
In New York, the United Nations held its first ever Food System Summit. It was the first time food was treated seriously as not an agriculture issue, but as a systems problem, linking health, climate, trade, culture, and inequality at a global level. The summit brought together governments, scientists, farmers, and indigenous leaders to rethink how food is grown, traded, and eaten. And Karen says that for the Pacific, it sparked a shift in thinking at a government level.
But now there's an understanding that it's more complex than that. It involves trade policy, what we're importing. It involves pricing and costing mechanisms about what we can afford. It involves thinking about the outcomes. Is the way that we are producing our food damaging the environment so that we might have enough food today, but in 10 years, we can't produce food because of the damage to the environment? Governments across the region are really taking this seriously because we really do have an understanding of the multiple impacts that food and the food system has on our communities. And those whole of government approaches are critical and I think really an opportunity for the region to take on these challenges.
And she says it also impacted the way SPC approached food security. And the result was how it tackled the problem of the giant swamp taro plant in Palau.
Recently, the Land Resources Division, which is agriculture and forestry, has been working with our geosciences division on supporting solving water issues in Palau for agriculture in their taro crops. There was a salinity problem. So that brings in those very different technical capabilities to address the same issue. And that's really what we're looking for. How do we get, I guess, more bang for our buck by working together to address the big problems?
The Pacific has been working to save taro and other staple crops for decades. In 1993, taro leaf blight, a deadly water mold, ripped through Samoa, destroying its supply of crops. So 5 years later, a special vault was created in Fiji to store and preserve backups of the region's most important plants, an insurance policy against the threats the region faces to its food.
The Centre for Pacific Crops and Trees is our regional gene bank, and it has two purposes. One is it helps us conserve the traditional genetic resources of the region, plant genetic resources. And that means that we have collections from the countries and territories in the Pacific, which we have custodianship over, and they're stored in tissue culture within the gene bank. And the other part is for research and utilization. So with those crops, we are able to research to identify particular traits that might be valuable in climate scenarios.
Plants from across the Pacific are collected, protected, and tested to find varieties that can survive a hotter, more unpredictable future. Scientists strengthen them through breeding and make sure resilience doesn't come at the cost of taste or tradition. Once proven, the plants are sent back across the region to governments and then on to farmers.
Of course, the breeding program for blight-resilient taro has been going for many years, and Samoa has been very involved in leading a lot of the breeding work. And they now have different varieties of taro which are preferred in the market and are blight resistant, and so they're being used there. Within the gene bank, we had some varieties that had been bred for the resistance, but it wasn't meeting the taste preference of Samoa. It did meet the taste preference for Fiji. So a few years ago, the government started working with these varieties that Samoa had not preferred, and worked with a farmer to start multiplying that variety. And they're now at the point where there is plenty of planting material to share to farmers in Fiji, so that if the taro blight ever hits Fiji, the taro is already secure in the field. They won't lose everything to the taro blight in the way that Samoa did in the 1990s. So that's really a great example of building resilience into the future, not just responding to an immediate problem that has happened.
All that work from gene banks to breeding programs is about protecting the future. But Karen says food security isn't just a technical challenge. It's a responsibility.
I mean, it's a really important responsibility. Food is everything. It is our health. The way we produce it impacts on our environment. It's culture and it's traditional knowledge. So it's a really, really important priority for Pacific governments.
But she says it's the farmers that are driving the real change.
There are so many people across the region doing really good work in food systems and food security. Farmers who are really doing their best to look after their land at the same time as producing food and feed their families. And I think that really is where the hope is.
Farmers like Dr. Shane Tutua.
When I was growing up, we have no idea of the concept of food security. All we know is that we just have to work and plant something every day. Otherwise, we'll be hungry. And that's what sort of shaped my worldview about food security.
Shane is a farmer, soil scientist, and one of Solomon Islands' leading voices on food security.
When I started looking after my dad's farm, I thought it would be an easy job. But when I started really getting into it, I realized that it was quite challenging. There's a lot of things that you don't expect happens. And you have to face a lot of challenges, like weather, pest and disease. So you have to sort of navigate around these things, and you have to be smarter and try to problem solve as you go along.
Raised on his family farm, he later returned to the land with a PhD in soils and now mentors farmers and pushes for stronger local agriculture systems. Shane, what are the key challenges Solomon Islands faces when it comes to food security from a farming perspective?
Weather, soil fertility and pest and disease continue to be the challenges we face. Also, increasing population for rural farmers who practice shifting cultivation. The population pressure really affects the farming systems, the shifting cultivation farming system, and that affects the yield and also the degradation of the soil becoming a real problem because farmers don't have enough land to be able to shift to because of the increasing population. As well as with the cash economy now, markets and access to markets is also a challenge for some farmers.
Now, you mentor and train other farmers. What are they telling you about how it feels to farm right now and how close many farmers are to food stress when things go wrong?
I can say that from one of the surveys that we did in one community, there were times the family goes out of food and they were wondering where to get food to cook for their children. And so the issue of food security is very real, and the stress that it's causing on families is also real, and it is becoming more common. Unlike in the past, there's so much options where you can look for food, but now those options are sort of limited.
How do you feel about how the country is responding to food security?
I think the policy of the current government, I'm not sure if it really addresses food security, because I can see that the agriculture policy at the moment is more towards commercialization of agriculture crops, big farms, large scale production. But I think there's a need to be a strong support for smallholder farmers growing food for the family. As you might know, in the Solomons, more than 80% of food supply comes from smallholder farmers, not big commercial farms. So I think the focus should be more towards these smallholder farmers to really support food security in the country.
What changes have you seen over the years in the way people are responding to food security?
There's a lot of organizations, NGOs, that supporting food security. In the past, only Custom Garden is involved with food security, but now we have World Vision, Save the Children, and all those other organizations. They are focusing their attention on food security. And there's a lot of talk now about food security, something that when I was growing up, I don't really hear about this concept of food security, but now it's becoming like a part of the conversations, current conversation. So people are realizing the importance of food security and food sovereignty.
When you imagine the future, what does a strong, secure food system in the Solomon Islands look like to you? And what gives you hope that it's possible?
Yeah, I think a strong food system in the Solomons would be access to a diverse sources of food from the sea, from the land. Also, adoption of technologies that can help to adapt to climate change or make the farming system more resilient. Also, stronger livelihoods so that people can have the means to buy food. If the food supply is low, they can be able to buy food somewhere or from another place. So those factors are, I think, important. Those are some things that I think are important for a strong, resilient food system in the Solomons.
So So farmers across the Pacific continue to work the land. Scientists study their plants, searching for answers. And slowly, governments are beginning to shift how they see food security. But as climate change threatens the region's most precious crops, the clock is ticking. Still, there is hope. Because when the call for help goes out, it is answered the Pacific way. By sharing knowledge, tradition, and wisdom. Politalk is hosted by me, Scott Whitey. Our producer is Kuntamari Crofts. Our supervising producer is Jordan Fennell. And our executive producer is Faleanga Fulu, Inga Stunzner.